You're listening to Podcast to Practice, brought to you by Springer Healthcare IME. Podcast to Practice brings you expert-led independent medical education discussions, inspiring healthcare professionals to maximize their learning and make measurable changes in their own clinical practice. This podcast is part of an independent medical education program entitled Biomarker Positive Disease, a personalized approach to selecting targeted therapies in lung cancer and beyond, and is supported by an independent educational grant from Roche and Illumina.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our podcast dedicated to discussing the latest developments in oncology. I'm Dr. Solange Peters. I'm a medical oncologist with a specific focus on thoracic cancers. Today, I'd like to discuss with you a case of mine, and we'd like to delve into the specific management of ALK-positive non-small cell lung cancer with a specific and particular emphasis on the adjuvant therapy. So I'd like to speak to you about this case of a 45-year-old male diagnosed with an early disease, a stage 1B, during a screening program procedure, which was found to be ALK-positive and was assessed for resection. So first of all, there is a biopsy, all the molecular testing and the proof of the cancer have been done, and the patient has to undergo a planning for a treatment strategy. So it's quite interesting to keep in mind what all the guidelines tell you, what you need and what you don't. You need a PET CT. You need, of course, a physical examination. You need a basic laboratory test in order to make sure that the organs are functional. And you need cardiopulmonary function test to make sure your patient is operable, right? So it's very important to keep in mind that before doing surgery, there are many things to do. There is some controversy about brain MRI. You need to know that for very early disease, the societies do not agree. So let's go back to your society to know if they find it useful. But in my country, we will usually do it. So this patient has everything done, and it was proven that only the nodule of 4.1 centimeter was found. It was a stage 1B, and the patient has undergone surgery. Confirming everything we knew. Remember that my patient is fitting what we know for ALK patients, younger patients, usually a bit more woman and potentially related to never smoker habit and usually adenocarcinoma histology. You have to keep in mind that what is very important in ALK disease is this propensity of the disease to go to the brain specifically, and we just discussed it. So that's maybe where a brain MRI is important. And that's also where everything you do has to be kept into the concept of a risk of brain metastasis. Usually ALK is diagnosed by simple immunohistochemistry, so you don't need lots of time and technology, but there are many alternative techniques to detect chromosomal rearrangement and ALK rearrangement. It can be RT-PCR, it can be NGS, but you need an RNA and DNA NGS. It can be a FISH. It's a molecular analysis showing the breaking point in the chromosome. So you have many options to diagnose our patient had an ALK rearrangement. So you are here with a patient with a 4+ centimeter tumor with an ALK rearrangement. So there is a risk of relapse, which is probably 1/3 of the patients. Usually in lung cancer, we have to keep in mind that post-surgery, unfortunately, half of our patients will relapse. And usually we give chemotherapy for an absolute benefit long-term at 10 years or 5 or 10 years, or more or less 5% of the patient cured. So we give adjuvant chemo, but for an absolute benefit of 5% long term. So this patient, basically in the old days, and I think we will still do that, we would propose him an adjuvant chemotherapy with 4 cycles of platinum-based chemotherapy, probably paplatinum pemetrexed. So what is new here? And that's the discussion of today. For this patient, we would propose to give an adjuvant treatment of alectinib for 2 years. So what we know for alectinib is that it's a specific ALK tyrosine kinase inhibitor, which has shown superiority over crizotinib in several aspects in advanced disease. It offers a better central nervous system penetration, and now you understand how crucial it is for the ALK-positive non-small cell lung cancer. It is better tolerated than crizotinib and has a stronger affinity for the ALK target. So basically, in the advanced disease, alectinib is beating crizotinib in all of the measurement aspects you can have to evaluate the outcome, including the brain control. This alectinib was used in a trial called ALINA as an adjuvant treatment as compared to chemotherapy only in this early stage 1-3A non-small cell lung cancer. The endpoint was made on stage 2-3, trying to show a disease-free survival improvement. This was massive. 2 years of alectinib was improving disease-free survival with a hazard ratio of 0.24 versus chemotherapy only. So 2 years of alectinib versus the 4 cycles of chemotherapy. So 0.24, and very importantly, the same kind of magnitude of benefit was seen in terms of preventing a CNS relapse, so the emergence of brain metastasis. So amazing results. It's very rare in oncology that we have a hazard ratio of 0.24. What is maybe the problem of this trial, if any problem, is that the alectinib, 2 years of alectinib, was compared to chemotherapy. Probably in daily life and routine, we would still love chemotherapy because we know it improves long-term cure rate and outcome. So probably we would give chemotherapy followed by 2 years of alectinib, which was not exactly evaluated in the trial. So it's always led to your institution, you as an investigator, or generally at the region to decide. But traditionally, the experts in lung cancer would potentially give chemo followed by alectinib. But basically, it does not remove anything to the huge magnitude of benefits of alectinib. Just maybe another word about TKIs, tyrosine kinase inhibitors in ALK. So we have a lot of these compounds which have emerged in advanced disease. First, crizotinib, then alectinib, brigatinib, which are new generation, and a very recent third generation ALK TKI, which is called lorlatinib. They all have a better affinity for ALK, allows for a longer control of the disease in metastatic disease, and they all prevent the brain relapse or control better the brain. So basically, they are all choices with different potentially toxicities. I might say lorlatinib might be the most potent one, but you also need to face and manage a range of very specific toxicities, including CNS toxicities. So basically, a lot of opportunities in advanced disease, but today we need to consider that alectinib can be given in the adjuvant setting in this patient who have the chance to be diagnosed as early disease. So basically, in conclusion, the introduction of alectinib as an adjuvant therapy for ALK-positive non-small cell lung cancer represents a very significant advancement in improving survival outcome for this patient. Remember, we had the concept already in EGFR mutated, and now we know that personalized management strategies, including vigilant monitoring and selection of appropriate first-line or adjuvant treatments, are absolutely essential for optimizing non-small cell lung cancer patient outcome. So basically, I think you know everything you need to know about ALK, and you'll read a lot more about it. But I'd like to thank you for tuning in our discussion on this latest advancement in the treatment of non-small cell lung cancer. And today we had the opportunity to discuss these 2-4% of the patients who have an ALK-positive non-small cell lung cancer. Please stay informed and stay ahead in the rapidly evolving field of oncology. Goodbye to all of you and take care.
Thank you for listening to Podcast to Practice, brought to you by Springer Healthcare IME. For more information on our educational programs available, visit ime.springerhealthcare.com.